This is the Winning Plays Podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the NBA's winningest franchise.
Winning Plays back yet again after the Celtics crushed the 76ers in Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Semifinals. My name is Brian Robb, joined today by formerly of the Winning Plays Pod, now the Ringer superstar, Michael Pina. Thrilled to have him back on the show for the first time this postseason. We almost had a full reunion part. Hopefully we'll have that later this postseason run of Rich. Stay tuned for that. But for now, Mike, it's great to see your face. And are you responsible for just bringing out this absolute beatdown in Game 2 by the Celtics on the Sixers last night?
B-Rub, happy to be here. I wish I could take credit. I think the one day of rest in between Game 1 and Game 2 and what that did to James Harden's body probably is the bigger culprit here for Philadelphia, along with Joel Embiid looking like a total shell of himself because of a knee injury that he said after the game, and this was reported during game one, 4 to 6 weeks was the time.
Can we start there, by the way?
Sure. Like,
yikes. Big time yikes. For him to admit that open, like, yeah, I shouldn't be here. You shouldn't see me for a month. I'm like, whoa. Like, based on what we saw last night, like, what does that mean for the rest of the series right now? Like, is this, how much better can this actually get?
Let's jump in. Talk Embiid. I mean, he wins the MVP. He reportedly says, I'm back to his teammates. And I do wonder, kind of half jokingly, if that tweet by Chums is like kind of pressured Embiid to playing in this game because, you know, you don't want to keep him out for too long because there's the tendency, of course, if he's going to play in the series, there's a tendency for him to get out of shape. And if he were to come back and have this type of performance in a Game 6 or a Game 7, if the Sixers were able to push it that far, he would be ineffective and kind of throw everything off kilter for that team. But I don't think that was a blip. I don't think that was I think he said, you know, we're glad to get this out of the way. I don't think his knee is going to be 100% by Game 3. And I think he can go off adrenaline, and he's super talented, and he hit some really tough jumpers in this game, long twos that kind of were his bread and butter during the regular season. But I thought that the Celtics did a really good job. Like, when they weren't driving at him and challenging him, which they did in the first half, I think 5 or 6 times, and he blocked all of the shots, they started to realize, okay, he can't come out to the perimeter. So there was one play where I think Brogdon gets it blocked in the near the end of the second quarter, and they run out, and Tyrese Maxey gets a bucket on the other end off the defensive play. And then Celtics call timeout, and the first play, the ATO that Joe Mazzulla calls, is running Jaylen Brown off a wide pin down set by Al Horford, and Embiid can't do anything about it. Al Horford sets a great screen. Jaylen Brown is free, knocks down the 3-pointer. And that's just how you got to beat this team, because Embiid's not going to be moving on the perimeter at all. He was switching a little bit in the third quarter when they got really desperate and things started to kind of unravel for them. That's just not a recipe for success for 48 minutes for this team. So I just wonder, is healthy Paul Reed a better option, and trying to recreate some of the magic you had in game one with Harden? I don't know. It's tough. It's kind of, I thought that the Celtics, even with a healthy Embiid, should be considered a heavy favorite in this matchup. So I don't know where the Sixers turn from here if Embiid is not going to be himself on the offensive end.
Yeah, it's to your point, it's like you go back to the regular season matchups, and before Embiid had that 50-point game, like, the Celtics, this is why the Sixers were like a dream matchup for them in terms of, like, with this roster where you just are constantly, Embiid has nowhere. Obviously, he's a great rim protector, but he has to guard the perimeter against this team. And you can even see Joe Mazzulla just going even smaller and smaller last night, with even having a lot of 3-guard lineups out there at points. And when those guys have it going or are playing confidently, when Derek White feels good about a shot and Malcolm Brogdon, you know, stops going at the rim and actually, you know, finds the high quality shots at the perimeter that are open there, then that's a problem for Embiid when he's fully healthy. Now, when this version of Embiid, which to your point, how much better is he going to get in 2 days? Like, it's not like this is like, if anything, it might get worse over the course of the series when he's playing 30, 35 minutes a night. It begs a lot of questions, and I don't know. We'll like some really tough decisions for Doc Rivers to go as this thing goes on. Cause if they lay another egg in game three now with Embiid looking like this, then it's like, what, like, are you going to turn your back on the MVP? Like, I don't even like, I can't imagine how that would go over, but it could conceivably be the best option for like this team to make it a series.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing that this, just looking at the Celtics real quick, that they had such a dominant performance in a game where Jason Tatum was such a non-factor. You would think that on a night like this, with the magnitude it was, that he would have played a significant role. And like you talked about the three guard lineups, right? Like those were kind of forced upon Joe Mazzulla because of Tatum's foul trouble.
Right.
And what was he, 1 for 7, 7 points, something like that? He started the game very aggressive. He had the and one where Embiid closed out to him in the corner. He decked it and finished in the paint. That was a great play. He went at Embiid a couple minutes later, drew a foul. And like, I think it's not rocket science to say he's very important to this series, but even more so important is the fact that one of the big adjustments that the Sixers, I think, may need to make in this series is like, they're getting absolutely nothing from PJ Tucker.
No.
And PJ Tucker's role is fundamentally to bother Jason Tatum or whoever's going off. And I just wonder, like, if you go away from PJ Tucker, which they may need to do because the Celtics just are not defending him, they're not guarding him at all. That just opens up a door for Tatum to suddenly look like the MVP candidate that he was during the regular season. And if you go three guards with Harden, Maxey, Melton, something like that, which has had success during the regular season, that's just like feast or famine for Tatum and Brown. And I don't know. I think there's not a lot of options, honestly, for the Sixers team. Like, I don't think Niang can be a big factor in this series because of just how ruthless they will be attacking him. Tucker's offense is non-existent, and I don't think you can justify his big minutes with the offensive rebound and the second chance opportunities he presents, because I think the Celtics have done a pretty good job, honestly, rebounding in the series, and they were the best defensive rebounding team in the NBA this season. So I don't really know where they go. Tobias Harris can't guard Tatum also. So like, it's just, there's all these different, like,
there's targets everywhere for Tatum. There's targets everywhere, like up and down the roster.
Yeah. I guess the point I'm trying to make is it's wild that he had a bad game. They blew them out and he will not play this poorly again. Like, this is a dream matchup for him. So, and he had a great game one.
Right.
So I just think it's a really bad sign for the Sixers if Tatum plays like he did and they win by like 30 points or whatever they did.
Yeah, you had Tatum probably a season low 19 minutes. Did not play the last 18 minutes of the game after getting the foul trouble and the Celtics just blowing doors in that third quarter. Al Horford, miserable shooting night, 1 of 8 from 3, 2 of 10 on top of the Tatum thing. And it all didn't matter because you started with Smart being aggressive, like getting the best version of Smart in that first half, like good or bad, he was taking shots, but he was making them and taking advantage in the post, which can be a strength for him when he has it going down there. So he kind of carried them offensively early on, and then they just patched the torch in the third quarter when the three started falling for White and Brogdon got red hot. And I think the other guy we should definitely talk about here is Grant Williams.
Hell yeah.
Emerging from the darkness of Joe Mazzulla's, like, sometimes doghouse here, This is the series all year long that everyone's like, all right, you're going to need Grant Williams against the Sixers. Only played 4 minutes in game one for some reason, even though Al Horford had a rough game. And I guess Embiid didn't play, so that, you know, obviously the Sixers were going a lot smaller there. But he was great. And he played 29 minutes tonight. And I think that this is a series where you're like, oh, yeah, this is why Grant Williams was a pretty prominent part of the last two long playoff runs for this team, and last year and back in 2021.
He had that huge energy play, hit the floor, grabbed a loose ball at the end of the first quarter that led to a Marcus Smart three. And then Marcus had that play where he challenged and beat at the rim, got it blocked, got it back, hit the fall away. They open up the second quarter with a backdoor lob to Marcus. So Marcus played great, really. Marcus played, I thought, tremendously offensively, as you said. But yeah, Grant, did anyone ask Joe, like, what is the, I'm obviously not covering this series, but like, what is the rationale when Mazzulla is ever asked about Grant Williams' minutes and the 4 minutes that he played in game one were so curious to me because he subs in the first quarter, early second quarter, I can't remember, and then switches on to Harden. The only play I remember from him is he switches on to Harden, guards him okay, Harden hits a step back too, and that was it. He gets the hook and doesn't return to the game, and Sam Hauser's getting his minutes. And I just like don't understand. I don't get it, because Grant's really good. Grant's really valuable. Grant makes winning plays. Grant can shoot threes, and his defense against Embiid or Harden, that's what makes him so valuable. He's a very versatile defender, moves his feet, stays in front of guys, very physical. I just don't understand why it wasn't a part of the team in game one, let alone the Hawks series. I just think he's a really good player.
Yeah, so he was asked about Grant last night after that game, and this was his uplifting quote about Grant from Joe Mazzulla here. Grant plays a role on our team. When he shoots the ball at a high clip and doesn't pass it up, we need him to shoot it, and he did a great job of that tonight. So I think for whatever reason, Grant, like, they...
That's not his...
I know, it's like, Joe Mazzulla raves about a lot of guys. He doesn't rave about Grant to the same level, even when he plays well in games like that. Whether there's something about, you know, Grant obviously pining for playing time earlier in the year when, you know, he was being jerked around a little bit in the rotation. I don't know what that is, but I agree. Like, at this point in this series, defensively, if Al Horford is not hitting three, like Grant Williams was their best big last night, like, or your most important big in terms of like stretching the floor and being able to be versatile to guard everyone on the Sixers defense, which I think, if especially as the series goes on and they trend smaller and go with some of those three guard looks like you talked about, Mike, like, Grant's going to have, that's the guy you can probably count on the most defensively to handle any look within that group.
Yeah. And it's just like, I wouldn't even focus on, I mean, 4-for-8 from behind the 3-point line is terrific. I just wouldn't even focus on that. Like, I think just defensively and in those like in between moments, he usually has a positive impact, and like he should be a part of the rotation. He should be playing big minutes. I would imagine, like, I just don't think it should be matchup dependent with him personally, and I think you can get enough offense when he's on the floor. Absolutely, he started to show things beyond just being a spot up 3-point shooter. Earlier this season, he can put it on the deck. He can make plays. He was finishing like in the paint in last year's postseason. Maybe his confidence is shot and he's not really doing that stuff, but like the overemphasis on his offensive impact kind of takes away for me why he's so valuable and what he can bring to the team. And especially if you're reducing Rob Williams' minutes when you don't need to play him, or like you said, if Horford doesn't have it, Grant's just
happens when you're 37 years old. Like, he's just not going to have it every night in the playoffs.
Absolutely. And I don't know about you, like, I would trust Grant more in a situation like the last play or last offensive possession that the Sixers had in game one. Like, easily. I trust Grant on an island more than I do Horford. I think Horford's value on defense, yeah, he can switch, but they clearly like him more in a drop these days. And he had that big block coming over on Harden, on a Harden drive blow by. Like, that's where Horford really shines, in my opinion. And Horford can guard and beat in the post, et cetera, with help. But, like, I just think that Grant is as good as anyone, and he showed it last year. It's not like he's worse. So, yeah, I just wish he played more. He's a really good player.
Four assists last night, too, on top of that. So that's, like, again, he played, like, 35 minutes total in that Hawks series, and you could kind of see the defensive identity of this team up before last night in the last four or five games was kind of had turned to crap. And I think it's no coincidence that Grant wasn't on the floor for the vast majority of those games, to your point, Mike. And now I think it's clear that he should be in the rotation. And I don't know. I'm going to throw this out there. This isn't going to matter here. Did Payne Pritchard as the ninth man in the rotation after we saw after fourth quarter guard time run that last night? Obviously, completely meaningless. I still think if the Sixers are throwing junk zones at you and go smaller in this series, I'd almost rather have Pritchard than Hauser, like, in a lot of those spots in terms of just the playmaking capacity. I know he's pulling me back in after putting on a show in garbage time last night.
Yeah, I think Peyton Pritchard's really good. Like, I'm over here in New York. I'm attending these Knicks Heat games. I'm watching Gabe Vincent go off. And I'm like, I don't know. I think Peyton Pritchard's as good as Gabe Vincent. I don't think that's like that controversial of a
definitely
statement.
Definitely better on offense.
Yeah. So I think Peyton Pritchard's really good. It's just kind of like he's not Malcolm Brogdon, right? Like, Malcolm Brogdon had a really good game.
Yeah.
Last night, shot the ball really well, was aggressive, probably a little too aggressive at times. And it is interesting when he's on the floor with Tatum and Jaylen, which you're kind of having to play more in the postseason than you did in the regular season. His decision-making in those units is interesting at times, where he thinks that he's the best offensive player on the court. But he's really good. And so, more to your point, like, I think Hauser's, all the metrics have suggested that Hauser's fine when he's on an island with someone. And there is value in kind of inducing or coaxing the opponent to go into ISO hero ball against him. But there are limitations with Sam Hauser for sure. And beyond, like, he'll hit threes, but he doesn't really do anything else. I think that someone like Pritchard, who's a very good outside shooter, can hit pull-ups, can grab offensive rebounds, can do everything off the bounce that you want from someone who entered the league as a prototypical point guard. Like, he brings just a different element for sure. And so size-wise, there's an issue there, but he also fights defensively, and right, he has throughout his career. So I don't know, like, I wouldn't mind
probably not gonna happen
getting those minutes.
Yeah, it's just one of those things when you're looking at the series and, like, the shots he can, the type of shots he makes and creates are getting almost more valuable in a series like this one against a team like the Sixers that are throwing junk defenses at you, and that it having an extra ball handler out there if they're going to go smaller. So you wonder, again, we'll see. It probably won't come up again because Tatum's not going to be in foul trouble like that again, probably in the series. And Joe Mazzulla is probably going to, I imagine, just go eight deep a lot. But if foul trouble does crop up in the backcourt at some point, seeing Pritchard over Hauser, I think might make some sense here. All right, so let's turn the page here to game three in Philly. We talked about some adjustments already here, but to wrap it up here, like, I'm curious to think, we talked about Embiid already, the James Harden, I feel like our resident James Harden expert, Mike, through years of of close diagnosis in Houston of his play. What version of James Harden are we going to see the rest of this series? And what version do the Sixers need from him to even give themselves a chance to like put up a fight here if Embiid is at 80% at best the rest of the way?
Yeah, I mean, I think like, I don't know, the game one, I did not anticipate. I don't think anyone did. It wasn't as much of a shock to me as I think it was to some, because like, he's a great offensive player. He's shown this season, his playmaking is brilliant, but he's shown this season like an ability to be super efficient and still has the step back three, can still get to the free throw line, doesn't do it as much because of who is on his team, but in minutes when he's carrying the offense is more than capable. And when he's like able to just pick who he wants to go one-on-one against, he's still elite. So it didn't totally shock me. I think Boston's defense against him in game one, particularly early on, where they were just like ducking under screens,
wild,
was weird to me. And that contributed more to his success. Not all of it, but that contributed a lot to his success. And I think the Celtics win that game if they're just a little tighter and execute their defensive game plan, or what should have been their defensive game plan, better. He's still like, he's really good in the mid range. Like, he can get step backs in the mid range, and did that even, I think, were both of his baskets, his made baskets in game two, step backs from like the elbow?
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, big part of his game. He had two threes. He went 0 for 6 by the 3-point line. He had two that literally like 75% of the basketball went through the rim and then popped out. So that's just like terrible luck. But he got to the free throw line. And I think also we should credit the adjustment, which was, we're going to put Jaylen Brown on this guy. And Jaylen was amazing, I thought. I'm sure that they showed him the clip of him getting shook on a drive in game one over and over, or even if they didn't, I'm sure Jaylen had that play tattooed in his brain for 48 hours. And he came out and was really effective on ball, really bothersome. He's more athletic than Harden. He's just as strong. And I think that matchup could be a troublesome one for Harden and for the Sixers if the Celtics choose to stick with it. So yeah, like going forward, I really do think that the 9 or 10 days off that he had between the first round and this series were super beneficial and contributed greatly to the game one. And he doesn't have that for the rest of, well, the rest of the playoffs probably, and definitely not the rest of this series. So like, his energy level needs to be high. I think they need to tilt more of the offensive responsibility to him. I don't think Embiid can do it right now because of his injury. And I don't think he has another 45-point game in him, to be honest with you. That would be kind of a stunner. But he is capable of going off. He is capable of getting to the step back. And if the Celtics are physical with them, and if the Celtics can stay out of the bonus, they'll be fine, I think.
Yeah, you know that. Like, it's all on him now. Can they not foul me? He got into the free throw line 10 times in game two, but that was, a lot of those were inconsequential. And by and large, they've done a good job of not giving him points on a platter in game two, when just getting more physical with him, push the limits. I mean, you even like Jaylen, to your point, like, he even drew an offensive foul on Tucker when he like gave Tucker a little, jab. And then Tucker got mad and friggin' like rammed him in his shoulder in the most obvious thing ever, and being like, okay, this is
not
like
a smart play.
Like, this is, what are you doing? But the Celtics just need to play like that. And if they do, it will keep Harden from, like, getting to his bread and butter spots, if you will. And And yeah, like, and with the onus, and I don't think he, like you said, I don't think he can handle that type of onus that the Sixers probably need him to do with Embiid being what he is right now. So, all right, well, let's wrap up with this. Like, you've watched this, the glory that is Heat Knicks firsthand this series. Give me a minute here. Like, who are we going to see in the Eastern Conference Finals right now? What's awaiting? What I assume either one of these teams will be obviously the favorite in that series going in. But is this I just don't. Am I? Tell me. I just see no way the Heat are going to lose that series. Am I far fetched to think that? Assuming that Jimmy can.
Oh, really?
I'm assuming Jimmy is going to be back in Game 3. I guess that's might be an unfair assumption.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say I think his ankle injury is the most important thing going on right now. Even if he does play, how effective is he going to be? That was a pretty bad injury. The fact that he didn't play in game two for this guy, one of the toughest players like of all time, for him not to play in that game was pretty telling, I thought. And I don't know what his status is going forward for the rest of the series. They are such like the Heat are just like, you got to kill them. But I think the Knicks got a taste of what their strategy will be if Jimmy can't go or if Jimmy is limited. And that is, we're going to take a ton of threes. We're going to play a lot of zone and we're going to muck the game up. Like, that's their strategy. And I think that healthy Julius Randle, healthy Jalen Brunson, both of those guys are also dealing with ankles. I think the Knicks should be favored. But again, I don't know what Jimmy Butler's status is. And I'm also just, if you look at kind of like the shot quality numbers throughout this whole postseason, Boston has the best effective field goal percentage, like above what their expected effective field goal percentage should be. And the Heat are number two, and both those teams are like kind of blowing everybody else away. I just think like Miami's shot making has been insane from guys who have not been hitting shots all season long. And I think that I'm waiting for that to come back to earth a little bit, to be honest with you. And when it does, if it does, I think that some of these games won't be as close as they have been. But I say all that, and it's kind of like, hey, if Jimmy comes back and Jimmy drops 45 or averages 45 the rest of this series, that's going to be trouble. I also just don't think that the Heat have like a good response for an aggressive, smart Julius Randle. Because Bam Adebayo has to keep Mitchell Robinson off the offensive glass. And Kevin Love is...
Yeah, just throw Kevin Love on him. It's fine.
Exactly. So that's a tough one. And at the same time, they want to go... The Heat really want to go small. They want to spread the floor. They want to shoot their threes. So Randle can be kind of a difference maker, I think. And he had some big, big, big plays in game two. So I don't know. I think my prediction was like Knicks and six before the series began. I would stick with that, regardless of Jimmy's health. I do think that that could be the series right there though. And we don't really know what it is. So yeah, I think it could be Knicks. I'm not really giving you a straight answer here, to be honest with you. The more I talk about it, the more I kind of go back and forth in my head, because betting against the Heat is just like stupid.
That's where I come from. But I think I also underrate. I think I underrate what the Knicks have done. I mean, they've been a thorn in everyone's side all year, and everyone's kind of not slept on them. But like, I feel like this is everyone's riding the Jimmy Butler wave right now. But if he's hobbled and then that's, I don't know if there's a solution to that problem. So that's, and even if he is fine, then the Knicks do have more weapons than obviously the Bucks had in the first round. So, it's gonna be a fun series. I think that I'd be shocked if that doesn't go, like, I almost expect that to go seven at this point, just based on the variables involved and how much the punches both those teams can throw. But they have Jimmy Butler has 3 days now to get ready. The Celtics do not. They're going to be back at it in game three on Friday night down in Philly. Michael Pina, hopefully we see you in Boston next round, making a ceremonious return to the Garden. Stay tuned for that. Is that guaranteed to happen? Is that going to happen? What's the...
That's more than likely to happen if the Celtics prevail. Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll stay tuned for that. We're gonna hope that happens here. Make sure you're catching all of Mike's stuff on theringer.com. What do we have coming this week, Mike? Are we doing a playoff reaction?
We have a Denver Nuggets column coming out tomorrow. Everyone nice. Go check out all the Celtics fans who love the Nuggets. Potential finals matchup, honestly. So if you want to learn more about that team, go check that out. And then, yeah, TBD. Playoffs are fun. Might dip my nose into the Warriors-Lakers series, which is just wild that is happening right now. It's a lot of storylines on that one, a lot on the line. So playoffs have been fun. I thought the first round was kind of dumb for a large segment of it. To be honest, I hate injuries, hate, you know, the ejections, all that stuff was really stupid, but the playoffs have been like just really great all time, like upsets and classic performances. And yeah, it's a lot of fun right now.
Yeah. The unpredictability factors at a high, and then you throw in like the high profile, like Warriors Lakers type matchup, which are not only just like fun teams in general right now. That's like, I agree with you. This is like put up this postseason with any of them right now, but we'll be back for more of it as this series rolls on. Again, thanks for Mike for hopping on. Make sure you check him out on The Ringer and all an appearance on a number of podcasts within their network as well. And we'll be back with you guys this weekend after game three.